You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
Welcome once again to Cool Stuff Ride Home. You know us by now, but I'm Marcus Papp. He's Reggie Rizzou. On today's episode, evidence that early humans were in Europe earlier than originally thought. One record-setting road trip takes place at speeds under 10 miles per hour. Hundreds in Mexico publicly protest the need for more sleep. And I could probably get on board with that. And on This Week in History, the closing of the nation's most iconic prison. That's coming up. It's Cool Stuff.
Chip stone tools that were excavated from a quarry in Karlova, Ukraine, may now be recognized as the oldest presence of humans in Europe. According to research published by the journal Nature, the tools were deliberately fashioned from volcanic rock. Archaeologists used new methods to date the layers of sedimentary rock surrounding the tools to more than 1 million years old. The study suggests that this is the earliest evidence of any type of human in Europe that is dated. Although the researchers aren't certain which early human ancestors fashioned the tools, it may have been Homo erectus, the first species to walk upright and master the use of fire. However, since they don't have any fossil remains, they can't be sure. It is assumed that chipped stone tools were likely used for cutting meat and perhaps scraping animal hides. This research dates the tools at 1.4 million years old, but other experts say the study methodology puts the tools at just over a million years old, placing them in roughly the same date range as other ancient tools on Earth in Spain. Rick Potts, who directs the Smithsonian Institution's Human Origins Program, noted that the earliest stone tools of this type were found in eastern Africa and date back to 2.8 million years ago. So these aren't the oldest humans, just the oldest known in Europe. The reason why this might be important is because Ukraine is so far north, suggesting that early humans who left Africa with these tools were able to survive in diverse environments. Per Potts, quote, "The oldest humans with this old stone tool technology were able to colonize everywhere from warm Iberia or Spain to Ukraine, where it's at least seasonably very cold. That's an amazing level of adaptability." So while they're not the oldest humans, it is interesting to see that 1.4 million years ago, they could go to these colder regions and perhaps survive when that may not have been the thought previously.
Yeah, very true, Reg. And I'm always fascinated to see some of the things that humans were actively creating at the time. And when you talk about tools over a million years ago, that's pretty wild to think we were already fashioning things from volcanic rock at that time.
I do find it interesting sometimes when they show these tools in the pictures, I don't know if I would recognize them as tools if I just picked them up off the ground. I'm clearly not an archaeologist, but sometimes I get what they're saying, like, okay, I guess this is a tool, but it doesn't look like you would expect.
Yeah, I'm guessing there must be some telltale signs that they look for to indicate these things were fashioned or created and this isn't the rock or whatever other piece of earth in its natural state.
In Puerto Rico, we call ourselves Boricua. We are proud, passionate, and full of life. On our island, adventure finds you. Strangers aren't strangers for long. The size of the audience doesn't change the beauty of the music. And we celebrate every last ray of sun. Live Boricua.
No, it's not Weird Wednesday, but if you listen to this podcast, you know we'll cover the occasional Guinness World Record attempt, some of which elicit nothing but an eye roll from me. But for some reason, this one jumped out at me as interesting. Two Florida women, and I'm not sure if that carries the same connotation as Florida man when starting a story, they're attempting to drive 500 miles in their home state, cruising from Jacksonville to the southernmost buoy in Key West. The catch here is that they're trying to do this in toy cars. Think of those Mattel toy cars that you'll often see toddlers cruising around in. Yeah, that's what they're saddled up in right now. The duo, Lauren and Cassie, said Guinness World Records does not currently list a record holder for the longest distance traveled by toy car. Shocker. But the record-keeping organization approved their application to inaugurate the category. Thank God. Lauren told WJAX-TV in Jacksonville, quote, "This just kind of came as this wild idea because we have these cars as kids. We used to ride around with toy cars as kids and have always wanted a Guinness World Record attempt. So we're like, this would be a fun way to kind of honor our childhood," end quote. Perhaps the reason this attempt jumped out at me, they're doing it for a good cause. The record attempt is raising money for animal charities, including the Red Panda Network in Nepal, the Costa Rica Animal Rescue Center, the Save a Fox Rescue in Minnesota, and the World Bird Sanctuary in Missouri. So good on these ladies. I wish I had more information on how they intend to navigate the Florida landscape for that lengthy distance, particularly when you're not able to use actual roads at such low speeds. But we'll keep tabs and report back. I'm also going to link the social media handles of these two in our show notes today as they are documenting everything as they go. So, Reggie, as world record attempts go, I think this is one that maybe I could give a shot to, because if nothing else, I'm going to have a radio installed, or I'm going to have something that plays music installed, and I guess just kick back, because basically you could probably walk this faster than you could drive it in a toy car.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out those toy cars, the battery life, especially when you have a full-grown adult sitting in them, isn't really very long. I mean, if I had one for the kid, it would be like maybe 2 to 4 hours. Then you have to recharge it.
So are they stopping at like a Tesla station?
That's what I'm wondering. How often are you stopping? 500 miles doesn't sound like a lot driving in a car. I mean, that is a lot. That's, you're talking hours of driving just in a normal car. Then you're doing it in a toy car. You're probably talking days here, I would think.
Oh, more than days. They said they expected to take them about 2 months to complete this journey. So I guess they got time on their side, or on their hands.
I mean, the nice part is, I guess you pull into a hotel, you don't need a parking. You just bring the car into your room with you. I mean,
pull into a hotel. I'm just picturing this long process of trying to make a right-hand turn into the hotel. Pull her up. All right. Carry my vehicle inside with me so I can check in or see if there's any availability. Oh, man. Yeah. The other thing, where do you pack? I mean, do you have a change of clothes with you? It's not like you have a trunk on these things.
I mean, I'm guessing they either have a backpack or they have somebody who's going to drive ahead and meet them where they expect to be and have a change of clothes, like in an actual suitcase in a car or something.
Yeah, probably the latter. I wouldn't be putting that backpack on there. That's extra payload, man. And that battery life goes down even further when you got that strapped to you. Well, not sure if this next story is a record of any kind, but it's one that I could probably throw my weight behind. Per Fox 44 in Waco, Texas, those walking the streets of downtown Mexico City last week, Friday to be specific, were quote-unquote treated to a bizarre sight. Hundreds of sleeping citizens, or at least citizens attempting to sleep, sprawled out on the ground at the base of the city's iconic Monument to the Revolution. That's a memorial arch commemorating the Mexican Revolution. Dubbed locally as the Mass Siesta, the event was in commemoration of World Sleep Day, which I didn't know existed, while simultaneously working as a protest of sorts to push for sleep to be considered an essential part of health and wellness. I don't know about you, Reggie, but I already consider it to be just that.
I find it pretty essential in my life. I need my sleep, so it is essential in mine.
I don't need any world body recognizing it as such, but I think I get their point. Some participants wrapped themselves in bright orange blankets while others prepped their phones to play soothing music as they slept. Now, among the napping crew here was 52-year-old mariachi musician Manuel Magana, who was popping in earbuds next to his wife, a 9-year-old daughter, who happened to fall asleep holding hands. Magana heard about the event on the news while he was looking for something fun to do with his granddaughter. He said the idea struck a chord with him because, given his profession, he would work long and irregular hours, often going to bed as the sun would come up. Said Magana, quote, "As a musician, I work at night and I rarely sleep well during the day. Sometimes we forget to eat. Sometimes all we get is a little nap," end quote. The event was organized by the Center for Sleep and Neurosciences at the Mexican Society for the Investigation of Medicine and Sleep. As participants drifted off, event organizers chanted on stage, leading a group meditation. They also listed tips for helping people fall asleep, like getting plenty of natural light during the day and turning their phone off at night. Oscar Sanchez Escandon, a director of the event and president of the aforementioned Center for Sleep and Neurosciences, said the event was meant to highlight sleep inequality around the world. So, yeah, clearly, I think this is something that a lot of people don't get enough of, although sleeping in the street, Reggie, I'm not sure that's something I could ever really make happen anyway. I have a hard enough time sleeping on my own couch. I just can't drift off. So if you put me on a roadway somewhere, even if I did have a blanket or a sleeping bag, I'm not going to feel comfortable and or probably safe in the middle of a major metro area.
I mean, people do it for Black Friday, so why not for this?
Not I, said the fly. No, there's a reason I don't go out for Black Friday or never did.
I didn't say I did it. I just said other people. And I am curious. They talked about on how they're listing tips for people to get to sleep, but they also chanted on stage and leading a group meditation as people tried to sleep. I don't know about you, but people chanting on stage would kind of prevent me from sleeping.
Well, I wonder if chanting's the right word, because I definitely, sleep meditation does help, and I've definitely experienced it before. It's pretty soothing. I mean,
so maybe by chant they're doing more of like a Buddhist humming chant type, you know?
Yeah.
Instead of like chants like "we need sleep, we need sleep."
Well, I don't know anybody that does that for their sleep meditation. We need sleep. We need sleep.
Well, that's what I'm wondering. It wasn't like a protest chant of
what,
like,
idiot, did you put in charge of this event? Hey, Jimmy, get up there and chant "we need sleep" over and over again. That ought to do it.
How about "go to sleep"? Go to, does that work better?
Yes.
That's what I yell at my kids at night when they're staying awake.
It does work better. Make sure it's "go to sleep," not "we need sleep."
Well, like I said, I yell at my kids at night, "go to sleep." And that usually works, right? The more energy you give it, the more likely it's going to work. Yeah.
You tell me.
No, it does not.
In Puerto Rico, we call ourselves Boricua. We are proud, passionate, and full of life. On our island, adventure finds you. Strangers aren't strangers for long. The size of the audience doesn't change the beauty of the music. And we celebrate every last ray of sun. Live Boricua.
Taking a look at this week in history, Alcatraz closed on March 21st, 1963. Now, the birth of Alcatraz actually started in 1775 when Spanish explorer Juan Manuel Ayala mapped and named the island. He called it La Isla de los Alcatraz, which means Island of Pelicans, because, well, it had a lot of pelicans, so, you know, he aptly named it. In 1850, President Fillmore signed an order to use the island for military use. A fortress was built, and about 100 cannons were installed to protect the San Francisco Bay. It actually served two purposes at that time, as was also the first operational lighthouse for the West Coast. By the late 1850s, they started holding military prisoners there, due to the isolation being ideal for a prison. By 1912, they had built a 600-cell structure along with a mess hall, hospital, and other prison buildings. In 1933, the Army relinquished the prison to the Justice Department, and they opened it as a prison on July 1, 1934. Nicknamed The Rock, Alcatraz Federal Penitentiary served 29 years as America's toughest prison. When it opened in 1934, it was designed as a maximum security prison for the most violent prisoners and those most likely to attempt escape. Some of its famous inmates included Al Capone, George Machine Gun Kelly, Elvin Karpis, the first public enemy number one, and Robert Stroud, the Birdman of Alcatraz. They had one guard for every three prisoners. Now, there were 14 attempts to escape Alcatraz, and officially, no one ever made it out. In the 14 attempts, 36 inmates tried to escape, 23 were captured, 6 were shot and killed, and 2 drowned. However, 5 individuals are still listed as missing and presumed drowned. As I said, the prison eventually closed on March 21st, 1963, after becoming too costly to run. It was actually occupied for about 2 years, starting in 1969, by a group of Native American activists, as they tried to claim the land on behalf of, quote, Indians of all tribes. After the occupiers started to become divided, Richard Nixon had them removed. It was incorporated into a new national park in 1973, and, of course, since then, has become a popular tourist attraction and offers guided tours. Have you ever been to Alcatraz, Marcus?
No, I haven't. It's a place I definitely like to check out the next time I'm in the Bay Area. But interesting history there. I didn't realize that, of course, the Native American protest took place, as you pointed out, in 1969. That's kind of a, you know, a sad part of all of this. But the history itself, when, you know, beyond that, when you're talking about the military use prior to, it's kind of cool to think about with cannons surrounding this small island. And then, of course, I think the connotation that comes to mind for all of us in more modern times is just an impenetrable prison of sorts. And we see that with how many people died trying to escape.
You know, when you go back to that Native American occupation, I think what caused the problem is their leader, their daughter, died while they lived there, and he left. And I think that's when they started to become a little more divided. You didn't have, like, you know, your central leader there to help organize everything. And yeah, it is kind of interesting to think about the fact that, you know, it went from a fort to a military prison to basically just, you know, a normal prison. And I've never been there. I kind of want to see it, but it also, I don't like being out in the middle of an ocean trapped in a prison, but I don't know.
Well, I'm pretty sure you can see the land from there.
I'm not a strong swimmer. I don't think I could escape Alcatraz, even if they were letting me escape.
All right. Fair enough. Well, hopefully, Reg, you keep your nose clean and don't have to go there anytime soon, even though it's decommissioned.
Well, I would say as long as they have a safe way for me to get there and back, I'm okay. But if there's any chance of problems happening, I don't want to be stuck in Alcatraz.
What would be this safe way that you're thinking of aside from a ferry?
Boat? I mean, a boat that I trust, but, you know, I don't know. Zombie apocalypse happens and I'm stuck in Alcatraz. I don't want that.
All right. I've narrowed it down to literally nothing then that is safe for you to go out to Alcatraz, because there's always a chance. And you're considering zombie apocalypses in all of this. So.
Well, you never know. See, again, I should just stay in my house and never go anywhere. All right. This kind of got off the rails. Let's end this version of Cool Stuff Ride Home. I'm Reggie Rizzo. He's Marcus Path. If you want to email us with comments or thoughts, coolstuffcommute@gmail.com. Also, like us and leave a review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. We'll be back with more cool stuff next week.